The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
It's Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors. Got questions concerning elder or estate law? Attorney Mike Connors has the answer. He's been recognized as one of New York's top lawyers by New York Magazine and brings nearly 40 years of experience to the table. His office number is 718-238-6500. That's 718-238-6500. Here's Mike Connors.
We are gathered here on hallowed ground.
Welcome to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors. If this is the first time you heard the show, hey, welcome. If you've heard the show before, you know the show is a couple of parts. Basic part of the show, we talk about estate planning and elder law. And we're going to focus almost entirely on estate planning and elder law today. And the idea behind estate planning is to pass assets from one generation to the next, paying the least amount in taxes we need to pay legally, avoiding going through court, avoiding probate, and as far as elder law is concerned, trying to save assets from nursing home bills. Now, as most of you know, when we start the program, usually you have one of the attorneys from our office, and we have one of our semi-regulars here, Nicole Donnelly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Now, before we got on, you were talking about one problem that we seem to consistently have. You want to summarize that?
Sure. So I get asked this a lot. You know, people just don't approve of the way their children are spending their money. They know their children. They don't think their children will be able to handle an inheritance. So they put their grandchildren on their accounts as beneficiaries. And sometimes the grandchildren are as young as 3 years old. What's the best way to protect money from your children for your grandchildren?
One of the things, that's not the best way, because there are problems if you start putting a minor child as beneficiary on your accounts. One, there may be taxable events. Let's say if that's an IRA, you may have to pay income taxes on the account, and the minor child can't legally collect the account until he or she is 18. So that's not necessarily a good position, because let's say you owe income taxes on it, you can't make a distribution without a court order. And believe me, you don't want to have to go to court to make distributions, at this stage. And so the child may owe income taxes. Maybe the parents have got to pay it, and they don't have access to the money without a court order. And maybe it's more expensive to get the court order than it is to pay the income taxes. And, you know, you're going in a vicious circle. And not only that, the child, when the child turns 18, is entitled to the, to distribution of the assets. Now, somebody says, well, can I put a provision in that the child doesn't get it till the child is 21 or 25. Yes, but that's what a trust is. And I think some people have a little bit of a resistance to a trust. They want to think they can, a lot of people say, well, I can leave it to my son, but with a provision that he does A, B, C, or D, or whatever. Yeah, that's where we come into trust agreements. And the trust agreement, and one of the problems here, you're going to have to appoint somebody to manage money for the child until the child reaches whatever age you think is appropriate, whether it's 21, 25. I would say right now, most of our clients are settling in around 25 years of age. But there are some doctors that are saying that a person reaches maturity at about 27 or 28. And Nicole, what's been your experience with this?
I mean, 27 or 28 is a little steep. I don't mind an 18-year-old getting some money and buying a Porsche. Live your best life, right? But I understand why some of the grantors may not want their grandkids out in a Porsche at 18. So it's fair to say that, my understanding, and I'm sure this is what you're telling them, is if anything out of the ordinary, you want somebody to inherit and you want to put provisions on that inheritance, a trust is the way to go, because otherwise people are getting the money outright, or in the case of minors, they're not getting it at all, and the estate is really going to be depleted by the court action, which is what you tried to avoid in the beginning.
Yeah, you do not want to have to go to court. And that's one of the, you know, let's say you have an IRA. You can name the trust as beneficiary. You have an adult person be the trustee if something happens to you. And then they can manage the money, whether they change the investments in the IRA or whatever. But they can make withdrawals, distribute it to the children, grandchildren, use it for their benefit. And at the same time, they can make a withdrawal to pay the income taxes on those withdrawals with an IRA. And, you know, and I know some people that, they say, well, why can't I just put my son or daughter on there, or my grandson or granddaughter? And what happens, one of the mistakes that happens an awful lot, somebody buys an insurance policy, especially now that stuff is being bought online. Because, you know, it used to be in the past you'd have an insurance agency sell the policy. And a lot of times the insurance agent could say, hey, wait a minute, you don't want to name a five-year-old as beneficiary on your insurance policy. But now sometimes people are buying policies online and there's nobody there to ask the question. And then you buy an insurance policy, you have your son as the beneficiary, and then you have your granddaughter as alternate beneficiary, and she's 10 years of age, and then something happens to your son, and all of a sudden you got a 10-year-old inheriting whatever, $1 million life insurance policy, even if it's $20,000 or $30,000 life insurance policy. You know, so for the most part, you don't want to name a minor child as beneficiary on your accounts. Now, I'm not saying like if you have a $10,000 account and you got a 17-year-old grandchild, maybe that's fine. They can buy a car and, you know, whatever when they're 18. But for the most part, we don't want a large amount of money that goes to a person under the age of 18. And you don't necessarily want a large amount of money going to a person who is 18, 19, 20 years old.
Another thing that comes up with homes, I find, is that people want to leave the home to their grandkids. And it's very important for our listeners and our clients to understand their own intent, right? Because a lot of the times when we dive into it, they don't really want to leave the home in the name of the grandchild. They just want the home to be there if the grandchild wants to live in it, or they want it to last for, you know, the lifetime or until the grandchild is 21, so that there's always a place to live, because they don't trust that their kids will be able to find a good home or something stable. What do you say to people who want to put their grandkids on their deeds?
Well, I would never put a grandkid on a deed. And ordinarily, very rarely would I ever put a child on the deed directly. That's why we use trust agreements. Let's say you put your son's name on your deed and your son dies before you and he's married. Well, his spouse may own part of your house and you may not like that. And like if you just put somebody else's name on the deed, you're making a gift. You can't take that back. And that's what we like to do a trust. You put your son as trustee if you want, but if something happens to your son, the trust is going to say that the house goes to your grandchildren, not your son's wife. Ordinarily, I mean, there are exceptions to every rule. And there's some people, you know, that say, well, my daughter is better to me than my daughter-in-law, or my daughter-in-law is better to me than my daughter. And yeah, she can have part of the house. But for the most part, 90% of the people do not want their assets to go to their in-laws. And the same thing, your daughter-in-law's parents are probably not leaving your son anything. And some people, you know, say, yeah? And then they ask and find out, and the answer's no. And one thing, you put your son's name on your deed, your son gets sued, you know, for whatever reason. Of course, divorce is one of the biggest lawsuits, but your son gets sued. He gets in a car accident. He hits a school bus. A lot of children in the school bus are seriously injured, and there's huge, huge amounts in controversy. Your son doesn't have insurance to cover it all. Well, guess what? Those kids who can sue your son have a judgment against your house. And, you know, we're going to have, 87,000 IRS agents coming on board in a couple of months. And these are 87,000 college graduates who are going to have no clue on what they're doing. And there's going to be chaos. People are going to be fined. They're going to be audited. They're going to owe money to the IRS all over the place. So let's say your son or your daughter's married to a businessman who's taking expenses and deductions off his tax return he shouldn't be taking. The IRS audits their return. The IRS puts a lien on your assets. and the IRS has a lien on your house because you put your daughter's name on the deed. And that's not even going with some of the other things. You put somebody else's name on a deed, whether you know it or not, you put your son's name on the deed, he has the right to, he might, depending on how it's worded, he may have the right to start what we call a partition action and throw you out of your same house. And again, you might say, well, my son's never going to do that to me. But would his wife, if something happens to him and she becomes part owner of the house? And now how much you word it because of what we call a right of election, where a spouse always has part of the other spouse's part, has a claim to part of the estate, it's almost impossible to completely disinherit a spouse in today's world. So you got to be very careful, and that's why you do a trust. You can change it. It takes care of the what-ifs, and it's clean for tax purposes. You put your son's name on the deed. He doesn't live in the house. You sell the house someday. Well, they're going to say, the IRS is going to say to your son, well, you don't live in the house, so you don't get the exemptions that you otherwise would get. And that also includes like a senior citizen's exemption. I know a lot of people, they put their son or daughter's name on the house. They're senior citizens, obviously. They put the son or daughter's name on the house. And a lot of times the son or daughter obviously is not a senior citizen. So they don't get the senior citizen's exemption anymore. And their real estate taxes go up. Now, if you have a veteran's exemption, if you give half the house to your son or daughter, you still keep your veteran's exemption. But, you know, a senior citizen's exemption, you got to be a senior citizen. All the owners have to be senior citizens in order to get a senior citizen's exemption. So, again, put your son or daughter's name on the deed. They don't get that exemption. And here's one thing that I see happen all the time. You put your son or daughter's name on the deed. You don't tell the insurance company. And that's happening all the time, and I don't know why. It seems like it would be common sense. If you add somebody else's name to your deed, you should tell the insurance company who insures the house, hey, I put my son or daughter's name on the deed. And that can cause a problem because let's say for the sake of argument, there's a fire in the house, your son or daughter's name is on the deed, and then the insurance company says, hey, wait a minute. We didn't insure your son. You never told us he was part owner. We're not going to pay his share of the house. You know, it burns down to the ground. So you got to be very careful. Do it the right way. Do a trust agreement. The trust agreement basically is the house is the parents as long as the parent is alive. After they're gone, it goes to the next generation with a whole bunch of what-ifs to protect the family. And you know, and I use son and daughter. It could be nephew or niece. It could be significant other, younger brother or sister, you know, but it's just that 90% of the trusts we do are between, you know, parents and children. But yes, you could have a trust between an uncle and aunt, nephew and niece, significant other, younger brother or sister. You know, don't be restricted because I use the terminology usually parents and children. Nicole, what was one of the email questions we got, Beth? One of the email questions we got is, okay, my father speaks only Spanish and he wants to do a trust agreement. What can he do?
Easy. Come to Connors and Sullivan and talk to me.
Why should they do that?
Because I'm the Spanish-speaking attorney here at Connors and Sullivan, and all of the things that Mr. Connors laid out and spoke about is I can do in Spanish with your dad, with anybody's, you know, relative. It happens pretty much the same way. There is no difference in the procedure just because we're doing it in a different language. We still take the time to figure out the intent of the person and what they're truly trying to do. Like I said, a lot of the times they come in with one idea and they realize what they really want to do is something else.
Yeah, because there are a lot of people that come in, I want to save on taxes. And yes, if we put a property into a trust and you hold the property till after you're gone, ordinarily it's going to go out tax-free. Right now, it's $6 million per person in New York that goes out tax-free. So they don't have to worry about it because a lot of people don't have $6 million per person. They don't have to worry about taxes. But they got to worry about nursing home bills. And the average cost of a nursing home right now in New York is over $15,000 a month. Now, Beth, do you know, I mean, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Do you know how many languages we speak here? Because I've lost track.
Oh, my goodness. I have, too. Michael, that's a job for next week. Do you have it available?
I believe I do.
We have
English, Spanish, Italian, Greek, Russian, Ukrainian, Romanian, Mandarin, Cantonese, Fujianese, Tagalog, and Hindi.
Aha. Has he left anybody out?
Yeah, he did. Because what language does they speak in Malaysia?
We're all looking back at Michael. Malaysia.
Yes.
Well, is that Hindi?
No. I doubt.
No. Malay.
Malay. All right. Well, we've got that one, too.
What happened in the Philippines?
He got that tagline.
I got that. Yeah.
Okay.
I heard that one.
Well, speaking of the Philippines, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be talking to Ismael Jose, who is from the Philippines.
Hooray.
Thank you, Nicole.
Always a pleasure.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older and are finding it harder to pay off debt, or how about enjoying your retirement years with less stress, a home equity conversion mortgage may be the answer for you and your family. Hi, this is Frank Melia, a certified mortgage planner, and I've helped countless homeowners all over the tri-state area tap into a little or a lot of their home equity so they can use it right now. Give me a call so our team here at Contour Mortgage can show you how the loan program works and how much you and your family may qualify for. My job is to help you find the best solution for your retirement goals. I do this by educating homeowners with straightforward information and answers. It's free to call and speak with me, Frank Melia, to determine if this mortgage program might be able to help you and your loved ones now. Call and speak with me. I'll answer your questions and help you decide if a reverse mortgage is right for you and your family. Make the call now, 888-954-7463. Once again, that's 888-954-7463, and you could be on your way to a better retirement. Frank Melia, NMLS number 62591, Contour Mortgage Corporation, NMLS number 34384, 990 Stewart Avenue, Suite 660, Garden City, New York, 11530, licensed mortgage banker, New York State Department of Financial Services.
How can I protect my family if something happens to me?
What if I need to go to a nursing home? What will happen to our savings, our home? What's the best way to give my home to my kids?
Who will help us take care of Grandpa?
These and many other questions can be answered with a phone call to Connors & Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC, 718-238-6500. Mike Connors, one of New York Magazine's top lawyers, has over 30 years of estate planning and elder law experience. Mike and his team of professionals will help you protect your assets from probate, taxes, and nursing home costs so you can have peace of mind knowing you and your family will be taken care of and protected.
I'm Mike Connors, founder of Connors & Sullivan. People don't plan to fail, they fail to plan. The time to plan is now.
I'm Beth Connors. Call today for a free initial consultation with one of our experienced lawyers.
Connors and Sullivan in Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, and Staten Island. Call 718-238-6500. 718-238-6500 or connorsandsullivan.com.
Do you have somewhere to sleep? Did you eat today? Are you making ends meet? For thousands of New Yorkers, the answer is no. For children and youth, adults, seniors, people struggling with addiction or mental illness, and for the isolated, Catholic Charities of Brooklyn and Queens is there. With 160 programs and more than 4,500 units of affordable housing, Catholic Charities is one of the largest multi-service charitable organizations in the nation. We help change lives and build communities. If you or someone you know needs assistance, call 718-722-6001 or visit ccbq.org.
Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with me, Mike Connors. You know, we took a short break, and we said Mel was going to be our next guest, so welcome to the show, Mel.
It's good always to be back here. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, and my wife Beth is here, and my son Michael.
Absolutely, we're here.
Hello, everyone.
Okay, now one of the things we're talking about is that now what language do you speak in the Philippines?
Oh, well, the primary language is Tagalog, but all the laws that are written in English. So we're kind of like bilingual.
Why are all the laws written in English?
There was a time when we were a commonwealth of, America. And then, I guess you Americans have done a great job in influencing, the methods of education, basically the content. And that's kind of like how it went when they bought it from Spain.
Do you think ill of us?
No, I'm an American too.
Okay.
No.
Because we have the Spanish that were there, and, I hope we were okay.
There are some, it depends. I guess it depends on who you speak to. People from the South kind of like look at it differently. Like I said before, I kind of like got introduced to that kind of thesis rather recently they said that they're more like Muslims, right? So, so they thought, they feel that when someone just comes into your land, gives it a Christian name, it's kind of like an offensive to them.
Oh,
so
I gotcha.
That's where they're coming from. So, but for the most part, people from the north, like myself, you know, we're like, you know, Americans. Essentially.
Well, the Spanish name gave it the name, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So that's not our fault. So, I mean,
no, we're still part of the same problem, though. We're all Westerners.
Okay. You just hope we're good enough guys that people remember us fondly. There's always World War II.
There's always going to be two sides in every coin.
Yeah, you know, at least.
All right. Now, what, you handle a lot of our real estate closings, but what questions have been coming up recently we want to share with the audience that came through the email?
Oh, okay. So, one of the questions this happens every time. You know, they come to Connors and Sullivan, do estate planning, and one of the items is a trust, and they put the parents' properties in a trust. Parents have moved out of state. Now they're selling. The question in the closing process is, do they pay estimated capital gains tax? In the case non-New York resident income tax, given that the parents are no longer residents of New York.
Well, why don't you answer that one?
Well, so first of all, the argument is that we do several layers. If the parents have lived on the property for at least 2 years in the last 5 years of closing, well, they're considered New York residents for purposes of the closing. That's one. Two, if the property is in a trust and it's a creature of New York State, we almost always win the argument that the seller is a resident of New York. So regardless of where the grantor is, if the trust is set up in New York, the property is in New York, you will almost likely end up not paying estimated income tax. That's kind of like.
And our trust all say ordinarily the situs of the trust is New York. Yeah. And so the place of the trust and what situs, that's basically what is the home, you know, of the trust. And we do say situs. And again, here's one of the things some people should keep aware. You know, like if you sell your personal residence, you don't have to live and own all the time in the same, you know, in the same residence. But once you move out for a couple of years, you could lose your $250,000 exemption. Now, one of the things like, which, yes, it does annoy me because I don't want the IRS getting more money than they should get. But a lot of times what I think a lot of people fail to do when they sell their property, and no offense to, you know, the standard real estate lawyer, but if they don't get the right advice tax-wise, they could lose a lot of money. Like sake of argument, let's say you got $1 million house and your husband died, your spouse died, and he owned half the house, whether it's through a trust or separately or whatever. Well, if the wife sells within 2 years of her husband's death, she gets to keep his $250,000 exemption. And, of course, if she lived there, she gets her $250,000 exemption. And on top of that, if, let's say, the husband died and he owned half the house through a trust or otherwise, and the house is worth $1 million, well, then the spouse gets a $500,000 in step-up basis on her husband's half. So, in other words, she can sell this house for $1 million tax-free, and we're not even factoring such things as improvements that you put into the house and things like that. So ordinarily, between a husband and wife, if the husband dies, and if we remember Alan King, the husband always dies first, but if the husband dies, the wife probably can sell the house tax-free. And a lot of people don't realize that. And another mistake, Mel, I mean, when other people do the taxes, you know, I'm astounded sometimes. We do an irrevocable trust, and some people think, well, you don't get a stepped-up basis because they read some textbook somewhere, or they read some article, which is half the time is written by some law school graduate who doesn't know, you know, practical things.
Or hasn't practiced at all.
Right, right. And, so, you know, some of the articles, and I warn people about this all the time. Like, if you read an article on the internet, please be very careful, because some of the articles on the internet are very good, and I read them myself. But some of the articles are written by somebody who's graduated from law school and hasn't practiced a day in their life. And they're just reading textbooks without some of the subtleties that could happen. Like, in other words, the trust that we do ordinarily to protect assets from nursing home bills is a hybrid trust. It's not quite an irrevocable trust. It has some strings attached so where the people get the stepped-up basis. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's say you paid $50,000, your parents paid $50,000 for the house 30 years ago, and the house is worth $1 million today. Well, if we have those strings attached where we get the stepped-up basis, that means you can sell the house completely tax-free based on the date of death value. And there's no estate death tax in New York under, you know, $6 million, I'm sorry. I was using $1 million for the example of selling earlier. But there's no estate death tax in New York under $6 million. And of course, if you move to Florida, there's no death tax at all. And there's no federal estate or death tax under $12 million, $12 million per person, you know, as far as the federal government is concerned. I don't know what's going to change next year. A lot depends on who's in the new Congress next year. And, I mean, that's a reason to vote because, you know, there were some dangerous ideas that were floating around, you know, last year when the Democrats had full control of the House and the Senate. Now they're a little nervous because they got an election coming up. But last year there were a lot of dangerous ideas. And there were ideas like you could sell, let's say, your parents' house. Today you sell your parents' house for $2 million. If you inherited it, you paid no tax. They were talking about you'd have to pay, Bernie Sanders was putting a proposal in, where you'd have to pay $700,000 in tax.
Well, I have a question. I know that we have friends that are attorneys and other specialties or fields, and they come here because they think you're going to help them with their taxes and everything. Well, these are attorneys that are willing to admit that they don't know all about the taxes and about the estate planning and everything. Do we think the IRS agents are going to understand all this?
Well, it's going to be very dangerous if we're going to have 87,000 IRS agents who have no experience loosed out on the public next year.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Are these the audits that everybody's talking about because they're not going to understand estate planning?
It might happen. There are going to be some stupid things. They're going to be, I'm sure some of our accountants downstairs are going to be hitting their heads against the wall when they get some letters, you know, in a year or two. And yeah, hopefully we're going to be prepared to deal with it. But sometimes it's very hard to deal with somebody who's inexperienced and who doesn't know anything.
And often tell clients who are just, you know, thinking about selling their property, you know, at least at the baseline, have a conversation with your tax consultant to see what taxes you're facing if you do end up selling the property. That's an important part of your decision whether to sell or not, or, you know, if there's something can be done.
Yeah, because in a lot of cases, I think people decide to sell their house. They got a two-family house, and they read something that you can sell your primary residence for $500,000 tax-free, assuming you're married. And again, I just want to throw out there, let's say a married couple sells the house, but let's say for whatever reason, only the husband's name's on the deed. Assuming they file a joint return the next year, they still get the $500,000 exclusion, assuming they both lived in the house for more than 2 years. And there are little things like that that some people don't quite, you know, understand. And again, if you're selling your house, you want to come into Connors and Sullivan, we've got a team of tax people here. We got CPAs, accountants. We have one accountant knows more than the CPAs. Mm-hmm. But come in and we'll tell you how much you have to pay in taxes. And our goal is that your family, you, pay the least amount in taxes we need to pay legally. We don't want money to go to the IRS. That's not our goal. Our goal is to reduce the taxes. And a good plan when we're doing the planning, you know, we're trying to put a plan together that we don't pay capital gains tax, we don't pay estate taxes, we don't pay gift taxes. I mean, gift taxes is usually not a problem today, but we want to put a plan together that we cover all the bases.
And this is all legally done. So this is what just because you're doing planning and you're making trusts and everything else, that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it or can't do it. So please don't let, I'm afraid the IRS is going to come scaring people and no, you couldn't do this or no, you, oh, please. Everything we do here is proper.
There's a big difference between tax avoidance, which is legal, and tax evasion, right? Yes. So it's important that you have the right advice, speak to the right attorneys, and like Mr. Connors said, come to Connors and Sullivan. We'll be happy to speak to you about your situation.
And let me ask you, Mel, is there any problem if you're selling your house from a trust? Some people think that they have a problem selling the house.
There isn't. Well, there's going to be some, you know, little quirks here and there. You know, a title company, a buyer's title company will ask you to state something on the record that the trust was not done for, you know, fraudulent purposes. It's a no consideration transfer, stuff like that. The trust is still valid. The trustee has authority to sell their property and stuff like that. But for the most part, it's not. It's just like any typical sale out there.
Let me ask you something. It also ticks me up a little bit. People, you know, buy these kits off the internet or whatever, and they say they have these kits where you do a trust, and they say, well, just simply fill out a quick claim deed form and bring it to the county clerk for recording. I mean, does anybody understand all the forms that are put together to record a deed in the county clerk and in New York City?
And that's the unfortunate thing is that you find out it's going to cost you more in the end. So I don't recommend that. For the most part, most of the issues I've encountered in all the closings, most of the delayed closings or canceled closings, were people who decided to save earlier. Just go with some, maybe, I don't want to name some names out there, but forms they've, you know, downloaded online and just decided to do it themselves. If you don't know what you're doing, be very, very careful. It could cost you in the end.
Yeah, because a lot of people I've done that. They fill out the trust kit, but they don't switch the deed over to the trust, and they've accomplished absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
If you have a trust and you own real estate, that trust does not affect the real estate. If you do not deed the property into the trust, a lot of people, I think, don't understand that. And I don't think the kits explain it well enough. And again, if you read those tax forms, yeah, we know what to do because we've been doing it. We do it 100 times a year. But if you read the instruction forms for some of those tax forms, you're not going to understand them.
Yeah. Well, that happened to me one time. There was a caller. She came in so strong, said, I want to close. I want to be able to sell my parents' property. And it took a look. She said, the property is in a trust and stuff like that. And she brought in a booklet with a trust in there. She was so happy. When it took a look at the records with the city, we found out the property was still in the parents' name, who were essentially both dead. So it was a probate situation. So be very careful.
Yeah, and sometimes probate is it's always a hassle in today's world, but sometimes it can be impossible. Let's say if you have a brother or sister who's missing or won't consent to the will, and, you know, like some people think, well, I have nephews and nieces. I don't even know where they are. I've lost contact with my brother's children. I don't even know where they are. Well, guess what? You just can't say, I don't know where they are. You have to publish in newspapers. And, of course, to be honest with you, in today's world, between the internet and the database searches and things like that, you can find almost anybody, you know, online. It's almost impossible not to find somebody. Yeah, if you have somebody who's convicted of a crime and they're on the lam and they're very good at covering up their steps, you might be in a position where you can't find it. But 99% of the times, somehow you look on the internet, you'll be able to find where somebody is. But you know, if let's say you don't have any children, you got nephews and nieces, one of your nephews and nieces is missing, you can't find them, well, you got to publish in a newspaper, and that could take, listen, right now that would take more than 2 or 3 years to do that. Meanwhile, you got a buyer for the house, and you can't close because you can't find this missing nephew or niece, and it doesn't matter whether they're in the will or not. That's what a lot of people don't understand. When you have to go through probate, everybody who's your next of kin by law has to be officially notified. There's no exception to that. And I mean, yeah, if you can't literally find them because they disappeared, you know, they're 90 years old and they disappeared 30 years ago, and we can't find a record of them, whether it's on, you know, through the Social Security records or anything else, which occasionally happens. Again, people back years ago weren't as organized as they are today, or the society wasn't organized. But you got to find everybody, you got to publish in newspapers, and that takes years. And that's not only in Kings County, you went through probate. If you were, you know, trying to probate your mother or father's will in Brooklyn, you could have all your brothers and sisters, all the children consent to it. And guess what? The judge may take a hiatus for COVID and not sign any orders for 18 months. You know, in the office this morning, we're just talking about one file where the entire file was completely complete. No objections to probate in August 2020. And the probate decree is still not signed. And part of the problems was the judge who was in charge of that file did not sign a single order for 18 months. The new judge has tremendous backlog, and who knows when she's going to be able to get to it. And, you know, fortunately, you know, the house was in a trust, but there were some other assets that did not go through the trust. And sometimes that's you know, another question sometimes comes up, why do I need a will if all my assets are in the trust? Because in a lot of cases, you might have assets that you don't know about that may go through the will. And this woman had some stocks that were in her name alone. They were through computer share. And she put a brokerage account in the trust, but somehow she forgot about the computer share stocks that were in her name alone. And so these stocks had to go through probate. Her house was sold. Everything's closed. And the charities she named as beneficiaries received all those assets that were in the trust. But at the same time, the assets that her computer share stocks that she didn't know were in her name alone, they're still sitting there 2 years later. You know, so we want to avoid probate.
Yeah, the extreme example, when a client comes in and asks that same question for the will, I tell them, well, the extreme scenario is that you won the lottery now, and in your excitement, you suffer a heart attack. What's going to happen with the money?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, years ago...
Wait a minute. Did you ever see the movie Waking Ned Divine?
No.
You should see that. And those people out
there... No, that... you've got to see that. It is...
Okay. Getting aside, we've got to take a short break. So you can listen to Ask the Lawyer. We'll talk about Waking Ned Divine in a couple of minutes. But thank you for listening to Ask the Lawyer.
Thanks, everyone.
How can I protect my family if something happens to me?
What if I need to go to a nursing home? What will happen to our savings, our home? What's the best way to give my home to my kids?
Who will help us take care of Grandpa?
These and many other questions can be answered with a phone call to Connors & Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC, 718-238-6500. Mike Connors, one of New York Magazine's top lawyers, has over 30 years of estate planning and elder law experience. Mike and his team of professionals will help you protect your assets from probate, taxes, and nursing home costs so you can have peace of mind knowing you and your family will be taken care of and protected.
I'm Mike Connors, founder of Connors & Sullivan. People don't plan to fail, they fail to plan. The time to plan is now.
I'm Beth Connors. Call today for a free initial consultation with one of our experienced lawyers.
Connors and Sullivan in Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, and Staten Island. Call 718-238-6500. 718-238-6500 or connorsandsullivan.com.
Do you know how many Christians live in the Middle East? 6 million people. Do you know how many Christians need your help? Every single one. Do you know what we can do? With St. Francis in Beirut, we can give them hope. We can give them medicines. We can give them medical equipment. We can give them everything they're looking for. Because some others decided to remove Christianity from the Middle East. But if we will help them every single day, not just to feed them or clothing, it's all about giving them another day with the idea that they are recognized, that we love them, they're our cousins, sisters, they're our roots. So St. Francis in Beirut, it's all about helping Christians. And you can be part of that help too.
If you want to help Father Paul in his mission, send your donations to St. Francis in Beirut, 213 Stanton Street, New York, New York, 10002. Welcome back to Ask the Lawyer with Mike Connors, now accompanied by my wife, Beth.
Hi, everybody.
My son, Michael.
Hello, everyone.
And by the way, Otto's in the room, too.
Hooray for Otto.
All right, Beth, you had a question?
Yes, I do. Let's say you're an elderly person and you win the lottery. I mean, like the big lottery, millions and millions of dollars. And you're sitting in your chair in front of the TV, and you see it, and it is such a shock to you when you realize you've won that you have a heart attack and die.
Yeah, well, basically, that's one of the reasons you need a will. Now, I mean, it doesn't seem to happen very often, but at the same time, let's say you do win the lottery and you pass away before you collect the proceeds, or even if you collect the proceeds and haven't done anything with them yet, that lottery ticket's going to go through probate. It's going to go according to your will. And if you don't have a will, then in that case, it goes to your next of kin by law. And you don't get quite convoluted once you get past, you know, nephews and nieces or further relatives who's, you know, part of your estate. But that's one reason everybody should have a will. And of course, what you're talking about, that's pretty much the plot from that movie, Waking Ned Divine, which I always felt that we should show Waking Ned Divine in the office is a learning experience because there are a lot of issues there. Waking Ned Divine is exactly, it's an Irish film. Old man wins the lottery. He has a heart attack while the lottery's being played with the ticket in his hand.
Full disclosure, I saw the movie.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, he doesn't have a will. And at least at the beginning of the picture, he doesn't have any relatives. So what happens to the money? Well, we'll go to the state. In New York, let's say if you died without a will and without any relatives, then the assets in your name alone would pass to the state. Now, what do you mean by relatives? Basically, if you're married, obviously your spouse is a relative. But otherwise, you would have to have a descendant of your grandparents alive. So if you do not have a descendant of your grandparents alive, you have no relatives, which means, I know it gets a little tough for some people to understand, but a second cousin is not a descendant of your grandparents. A first cousin once removed is a descendant of your grandparents. And, you know, you can go on about this, but basically, if you do not have a descendant of your grandparents alive, and you're not married, your next of kin is New York State, and you died and with assets in your name alone, the assets would go to New York State. And it happens sometimes more than you think, because in a lot of cases, people think, well, you know, my husband has a number of children, or my husband has some nephews and nieces, so they're my nephews and nieces, aren't they? Well, no. Your spouse's relatives are not your relatives. So let's say you have a husband and wife. They own a house together. It's in both their names. They don't have any children. Their parents are gone and so forth. And we'll say, you know, the wife has no relatives. The husband had a number of brothers and sisters. Then they both die in an accident together. And let's say the wife dies after the husband, let's say 4 days after the husband. And the husband died, left everything to his wife. Wife died. She has no relatives. That house passes to New York State. So that was kind of like the problem in Waking Ned Divine.
Okay. Now, he has all these neighbors that have been taking care of him in his old age. And, you know, it's a very small town. And they're all like they're related. They take care of each other. So, hypothetically, would it be possible with a little bit of chicanery for these people to get the money and have it not go back to the state?
Well, that's the theory of the movie. And of course, what they do, they pretend that another person is Ned Divine, who collects the money from the lottery. And at the same time, they figure out banking, that they open up a joint account between Ned Divine and somebody else. And then that somebody else later can withdraw the money. And, you know, there's a lot of little clever banking ideas in there and so forth and so on. And, you know, one person pretends to be Ned Divine for the revenue agent who's paying over the money. And it's an elaborate scheme. And, of course, one of the problems is the revenue agent comes over for Ned Divine's funeral. So they have to reverse engines.
Well, and let's say that there's a nasty old lady who lives in this lovely little town. And she's not going to go along with this. You know, and she's going to turn everybody in. What happens then?
Well, that's where divine intervention comes in the movie. You know, the revenue agent is going out of town. The priest is coming back from his vacation. They almost get in a car accident. And then the priest hits a phone booth where the old lady is as she's trying to make the call to the revenue agents to turn everybody in. And the phone booth goes over the edge. And divine intervention takes over. But I don't think you can count on divine intervention. You should be doing a will. But as I mentioned, you know, like Ned Divine has a lot of legal issues involved in there. And of course, one of it, at the end, it appears that Ned Divine may have had a non-marital child who would have inherited everything, but his mother decides not to pursue that claim and let the whole, you know, town go into the lottery winnings. And here's one thing I do want to mention. A lot of times when people win the lottery, people come out of the woodwork to try to get them to invest in different schemes, give some schemes. You know, I remember one poor guy, he's long dead now, but he won the lottery and he had a brother in Sicily he hadn't seen in 30 years. And he sends his brother in Sicily a check for $100,000. Now, back then, we had a $600,000 limit on gift taxes. After $600,000, you had to pay half your gift to the government. So he maximized his gift. He was doing, of course, whatever you give to charity is not tax. But he sent his brother $100,000. Hadn't seen his brother in 30 years. His brother gives him a call and says, "You cheap SOB, I see in the paper you're in the $25 million lottery, and you only give your poor brother $100,000.
So that was typical. Found money.
Yeah.
Complaining about found money.
But anyway, this poor guy, Gene, you know, about 3 years after he wins the lottery, he tells me it was the worst day of his life, winning the lottery. So, you got to be careful what you wish for.
What was nice, didn't he get to know Mother Teresa?
No.
EWTN? Who was that? That was another lottery.
You're confusing Mother Teresa with Mother Angelica, and I don't think that's...
Oh, not Mother Teresa. I'm so sorry. Mother Angelica.
I'm saying that's really...
No, I'm very
ignorance.
Sorry. I'm the Methodist. No, it just... No. Mother Angelica, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he got to know some nice people.
Right.
So it wasn't all bad, but he did have a terrible time.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't think he cared that much about Mother Teresa, Mother Angelica. He just wanted to give money to charity and picked a bunch of charities with the help of his nephew, where they thought it would do the most good. And he was a very generous man. But, you know, it was kind of sad. At his funeral, there were only about a dozen people at the funeral. And believe me, this guy gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to how many groups and organizations and people in the neighborhood, and like I said, there were only about 12 people in the funeral, which included the home attendant and a couple of members of her family and 3 people from the office. And, you know, it was sad at the end when you think about it. You know, all the good the guy did for how many organizations, and, you know, only 3 people showed up, and 3 people besides his employees, in effect, showed up for his funeral. So, but Ned Devine at least had everybody at his funeral, so that the whole town was
and
there.
And a marvelous ending.
Right. It's a great ending. So if you see the movie, I've been talking about it. We should have Waking Ned Devine on a movie night here at the Law, because there are a lot of things: international banking, dying without a will, lottery, a lot of things involved in that, you know, and
chicanery.
Yeah. But sometimes you got, you know, the banking account, I've seen that used on different occasions for people to embezzle money out of a family member. Let's say, for the sake of argument, you know, you have a grandmother and a granddaughter, and they have, you know, a joint bank account. Granddaughter takes the money out of the joint bank account, opens up a bank account in another state, her name in trust for her grandmother. And nobody's really that suspicious about it, because both names are on the account to start with and both names are on the account later. And then she takes the money out of the final account and converts it all to her own use. And she's pretty clever about it. And this is her own grandmother.
This is a true story.
Yeah, this is her own grandmother she was stealing from. And I mean, you know, most people are honest, but there are those people who are not that honest. And here's one of the things, you know, like, you got to be a little careful, and you got to prepare carefully for the future, and you never know what's going to happen. But when you're doing a power of attorney, think about who you're giving the power of attorney to. Because, yes, most people are honest, and most people will do the right thing, but not everybody. And if you give the power of attorney to the wrong person, they can wipe you out, and they can steal you blind. So be careful on that. Now, at the same time, some people are going to say, "Hey, I told everybody not to do a power of attorney." Well, that's not true either, because if you don't have a power of attorney, God forbid you have a stroke or another disabling illness, you may have to go through court. It's a very embarrassing procedure. You know, court-appointed lawyers are going to ask questions about who's the president of the United States, where do you do your banking, so forth and so on. And I've seen some elderly people, you know, and occasionally some elderly people who, you know, went through World War II or whatever, and they get very nervous when they get, you know, they don't quite 100% understand the situation that's in front of them, and they get nervous just being, you know, in front of police officers and guards and stuff like that. So you don't want to go through guardianship. But if you're married more than a few years, you trust your spouse, I strongly recommend you think about doing a power of attorney. And if you have a son or daughter you implicitly trust, you know, yeah, put them on your power of attorney. Do I tell you not to put a nephew or niece on your power of attorney? If you trust your nephew and niece, I would put them on. Because if you ask your question, who do I trust more, my family or the court system, I hope it's going to be your family. Because the court system, even if everybody is well-meaning and everything else, thousands and thousands of dollars get churned around and get lost in court fees and application fees, referee fees, and it's just really an expensive procedure without a lot of good coming out of it. And not that it happens that often either, but sometimes guardians steal money from the incapacitated persons.
Even like a well-meaning court, they're not in any hurry to get any business done. So, you know, I don't trust. I've gotten to the point, you know, if y'all were listening last week, when I mean, the IRS, you know, it's gotten to the point where I'm not trusting anybody. We're sitting around waiting in some, in surrogates courts for people to sign orders. They won't sign the orders for months. And the parent, the families are suffering. Someone's passed away and there's a house and you're sitting on the court waiting for them to say, yes, go ahead. You can sell it, whatever. And people are losing money. They don't care. That's the bottom line. They don't care. And even if they're not bad people, they're not in a hurry.
Right. But in any event, if you want to do your planning, please feel free to come in and do your planning with us at Connors and Sullivan. And we can talk over what you want to do with your power of attorney. And the power of attorney can literally be one of the most powerful documents you sign. And it needs some consideration and care. But if you don't have a power of attorney, you don't want your estate to go through the court system and court-appointed attorney fees, what they call court evaluators, referee fees. You know, if you have family members you can trust, 95% of the time, if not more, I would think you'd rather have a family member, you know, handle all those assets. So if you want, come in to Connors and Sullivan, give us a call, 718-238-6500, 718-238-6500. We have offices in Queens, Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Staten Island. Thank you for listening this week. We'll see you next week at the same time and places.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Kevin McCullough, are you or your parents' assets protected from nursing home bills? Did you know these bills can exceed $15,000 a month? People work their entire lives to live comfortably in retirement, but when people become ill and need to go to a nursing home or receive home care, the bills can drain their assets, leaving many people bankrupt. The good news is that you can prevent that from happening if you plan in advance. Connors and Sullivan's lawyers can customize a plan that specifically protects your interests, including your home. Schedule a free comprehensive telephone consultation with Mike Connors to discuss your issues and concerns from the security of your home. Call today, 718-238-6500, 718-238-6500. Don't let nursing home bills take your life's savings and leave you and your loved ones bankrupt. Don't wait another minute. Mike Connors can take you through the process by telephone and start a plan designed for you today. That's 718-238-6500. 718-238-6500.
The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Connors and Sullivan Attorneys at Law, PLLC.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.